about 3 or 4 months and under the auspices of CIA, but only a shadow of its former self.
Major, how did you come to be involved, if we might know briefly, to even begin thinking about forming this? Do you yourself have some sort of psychic power, or were you simply in charge of the project to gather together those who allegedly did?
Well, I'm about as psychic as a rock.
I see. Okay.
My job at very high levels of intelligence in the early 1980s, about 1980-81, was to orchestrate the penetration of high value foreign intelligence projects, and to wit, foreign missile delivery systems, nuclear weapon systems, biological and chemical warfare programs to penetrate those and gather intelligence on them. There were some of those targets that, by hook or by crook, using agents or satellites or special operations units, short of an act of war, I could not answer the mail, so to speak. And so, as a tactic of desperation, I turned to earlier CIA studies and to work that was being done by an operating U.S. Army unit using people, natural psychics. Joe McMonagle, who you might have seen the other night on Nightline, was one of those naturals, to help me solve problems or give me some type of a handle on the problems I was faced with, very intractable problems.
So, Major, you this idea was birthed from your brain then. In other words, you weren't brought in and sat down by some colonel or general and said, well, here is your next assignment, Major. You're going to put this unit together.
That was not my primary job. I put together an effective operating force. But the unit, in fact, in its original primal form, was already operating in the late 1970s using naturals. There was it evolved into something much more powerful later.
Huh.
We can talk about that.
All right. What disinformation was most apparent to you in the Nightline program? In other words, as I said earlier in the introduction, it seemed very odd they did a show on this right in the middle of the Bosnian thing. Very odd. I mean, it popped out of nowhere.
I think it's a really damaged control. There are elements of Congress, certain congressmen who were involved in supporting the project, and the CIA itself, to avoid embarrassment, wanted to do some damage control. I think that was one element. I am not sure about that, about their agenda. What I am sure about are two points that were erroneous. Ted Koppel stated that, or attempted to ascertain that the CIA statement of spending $11 to $20 million
right
on the program was real. That is not, in fact, correct. Stargate, the remnants of the collection group, the intelligence collection group, that was a research project. The $11 to $20 million that the CIA says it spent was not on operational, that is, an intelligence collection element. It was on research funds, research monies, an attempt to establish the validity of technical remote viewing. That's my term. That's what my company uses. And not on intelligence collection. That's one point. Second point is that Stargate was not the was only the last 6 months to 2 years of the program, and only consisted of three remote viewers that worked for the government. One, who I trained and was an excellent remote viewer. The other two were naturals, and they were simply tarot card readers that the agency found somewhere, and that were essentially the concubines of a couple of congressmen. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. You say whatever you want. First of all, how effective is remote viewing? A lot of people don't even know what remote viewing is. A lot of the audience doesn't. They probably didn't see Nightline. What is it, and how effective actually is it?
Let me give you some background. The reason that those of us in Army intelligence in the 80s could not use natural psychics was that natural psychics, when they were on target, they were really on, the best of the best. And there were about five or six of them in the United States. But when they were off target, they were really off. And it was that lack of consistency that disallowed them from being used on operations, in support of operations where deadly force would be used,
sure,
or where life or death situations prevailed.
Sure, but I'm sure you had to crunch numbers, and they demanded numbers. I mean, how else do you prove it? They're right X number percent of the time and wrong some percent.
That was not my job to crunch numbers.
No.
There were two aspects of this program. It's important to distinguish that. Two parallel programs. One was a research side of the house that was out in the open. That's the kind of thing that was being discussed by the Keith Arary and Dale Graff and
yes,
yeah, the other night. But there was another unit that was very, very secret, and that was the unit for which I was operations officer and training officer. We were actually the intelligence collectors. We did not have to be politically correct, that is, to crunch numbers. To validate the existence of the phenomenon in the eyes of the U.S. Army and people who own the project at
yes,
DOD level,
yes,
the research had to continue in order to justify the continued expenditure of funds for the operational element of which I led.
What has made you decide to go public about this?
A number of things, not the least of which is that the taxpayers spent a lot of money on the development of this program, and I'll talk about what I mean by that.
Did we waste our money?
No, you did not waste your money. My company is now helping federal authorities find the Unabombers, and we'll be very successful at doing that. That'll be proof of the pudding. But that came about from a lot of hard work on the part of U.S. Army officers that... And a brilliant discovery in 1983 by a man, Ingo Swann, a natural psychic who lives in New York City,
mm-hmm,
who discovered a structured way of how the unconscious mind communicates with conscious awareness, how to tap into collective unconscious, if you will, sort of like an automated database, the same way one would search out a database. How to allow the unconscious mind to do that and communicate to conscious awareness detailed, very accurate information while suppressing imagination, being able to train someone to distinguish between his or her imagination and the data that is associated with a target, a person, a place, a thing, or an event,
mm-hmm,
and how to suppress one's propensity to analyze the data. So we're downloading from collective unconscious raw perceptual information in a very structured way.
And when you say target, you mean a specific individual?
What I mean is a person, information about a person, a place, a thing, an object, or an event. We can reconstruct an event using these techniques. What happened in a place?
And that would be interesting. How does one, if there's a way to explain it, teach somebody with these powers to delineate between their own imagination and what is being remotely viewed? That would be quite a trick.
That was part and parcel of the breakthrough discovery made by Ingo Swann, the person who was a contractor, the natural psychic who was contracted by the U.S. government, the Army in this case. That was part of his discovery at Stanford Research Institute in 1983. He had been there for a number of years and had been the guinea pig of the American Society for Parapsychological Research for many years, and extremely gifted natural psychic who turned his attention on himself and said, how am I doing this? And was able to put together a model for how he himself, as a naturally gifted psychic, was communicating his unconscious to his conscious awareness. When he put together this model, which is a set of protocols, behavioral protocols that I teach and that he taught me, we're able to discriminate, to teach ourselves how to distinguish imagination all the time from what we call the signal, that is the data that's associated with our target.
So
this is a profound discovery.
The signal is just a sort of a part of the overall noise level.
The signal is that little weak voice, if you will, that is associated with the target as opposed to
our
own background noise, the day-to-day, moment-to-moment conscious noise that we have in our conscious mind.
Is there a way, or you may not want to, and I don't want to push into it, but is there a way to briefly describe to us the methodology you use?
Yes, I'll give you an overview. Without going into the course is a 9-day very intensive course, and so I'll skip a lot. including lectures.
Okay.
But basically, we acquire a target. We are able to turn our conscious attention and our unconscious mind to the target via a series of stages. It takes about 20 minutes for us to go through, as remote viewers, to go through these stages to a point where we can accurately begin to perceive correctly elements about a target, a person, place, a thing, or an event. These stages, there are six stages. Each one is tantamount to increasingly greater target contact. At first, this is done in the state of high attention. It is not like the old days where we use altered states, laid down in a bed in a dark room,
right,
and sort of like a stream of consciousness protocol. This is a very structured technique. The remote viewer is sitting at a desk with a ream of white paper in front of him or her and a pen. And using these protocols, they first perceive a target. They're not told what the target is. They're only given a random number. Their unconscious mind is taught to do all the work. They perceive a target first as a gestalt of information, kind of a thought ball, if you will. This is elaborated on the paper in a certain way. The next stage is sensory perceptions, where they objectify in words and sketches the colors, the textures, the smells and tastes, the sounds, the temperatures, and the dimensions that are present at the site. They write those words down, and it's done in an order about 4 seconds. Think of a metronome in front of you, where you're moving very rapidly, writing down these percepts. The next stage is kinesthetic target contact, where they do some cursory sketching of the target. The next stage, stage four, is where they begin to make judgments about the data and write down things like people, chairs, meeting, those kinds of things.
Yes.
And we proceed along using these protocols in a very structured manner, where to the point where we can do accurate, very accurate drawings, distances, directions, vectors of a target. We can do clay models of a person, a place, a facility, those kinds of things, an object. For instance, right now we're modeling for a federal agency the next set of bombs that the Unabomber is making to use against civilians.
Wow.
So that kind of thing. That's what my company, SciTech, is doing now.
In the research at SciTech, or in that government work you did, was there ever any research into whether the target at any point becomes aware in any way or of any change, discomfort, probing, aware in any way that he or she is a target?
If the target happens to be a natural psychic, somebody that's very gifted, a very gifted natural, and we all have this faculty. It's innate. It just has to be trained to be useful, and there was no structure or grammar, if you will, until the discovery was made. If a trained remote viewer or a natural psychic happens to be the target, then sometimes they are aware that they're being targeted. But it's fairly rare. We go in the back door. If our target is a person, Saddam Hussein or Abu Nidal or a terrorist, we go in the back door, so to speak. We can be in their mind, in their dreams, and they will never be consciously aware that they're being targeted.
Major, is it possible to, beyond reading somebody, in essence, or remote viewing?
I don't know what you mean by reading, actually.
Intuitively reading through them in the remote viewing process.
What I'm asking is
it possible to go to beyond that and actually control another mind?
We have never been able to do that. Our Soviet counterparts, the KGB team, known as the extra sensors, that was the Russian term, they attempted those kinds of things, mostly unsuccessfully. They tried to stop hearts by experimenting with frogs, stopping frogs' hearts, and then attempting to move up and up the ante. But they were fairly unsuccessful. We never attempted anything like that. And as far as I know, we wouldn't be able to do it. I would not engage in that kind of thing.
Okay.
It's a passive act. It collects information and downloads it very accurately.
Major, this is just conjecture, but do you think that this ability apparent innate ability in some, is something that we are coming to as in the process of evolution, or something that is long forgotten and simply being resurrected by people like you?
Well, I'm speculating. When I say this, and it's my personal opinion, I think it's our birthright. I think it was forgotten somewhere way back there, centuries, or perhaps millennia ago. That's what I believe to be true. It has been a periodic cyclic interest since the mid-1800s. Now I think it's going to stick this time.
Well, the military intelligence people seem to be prepared to say, in essence, we're turning it over to the private sector. I assume they meant people like you. But if this was so effective for the military, I can't imagine the intelligence folks casting it off to the private sector.
Well, I've been involved in a lot of very, very deep, dark, black projects in my career, and I have to say that I have never dealt or been assigned to a unit that has suffered more ostracism, mm-hmm. more been looked upon with more fear, more jealousy than that unit that I was assigned to.
I can imagine that.
And it was in the late 70s, it was associated with the occult. That gave it a bad name. And no matter how good we performed, there were others that senior officers, not just Army, senior civilian officials who were scared to death by this. They did not want to hear that it was true. When the head of the Presidential Foreign Intelligence Corps, the PIFIAD, was briefed, he went sheet white and said, man should not know these things until he dies. So you can imagine what we were up against.
I really can. Major, stand by. You've got about a 4 or 5 minute break. Stay right there. We'll be back to you. My guest is Major Ed Dames, U.S. Army retired. Put together the team, one of the teams, actually was the leader of that program that you saw on Nightline. A lot of inaccuracies there, and we will probe further in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 7th, 1995.